Hey everyone, welcome to Season 10, Week 5 of The Tension Podcast. We are a show that acknowledges most of life and faith is lived in the tension between the two extremes. Each week we look at what many of us were taught growing up in evangelical churches, we weigh it against what our current culture is saying, and we try to find what Jesus has for us in the tension between the two. We haven't met. My name is Jonathan Corona, and we're joined as always by our co-host, Mr. Eric Williams. Eric, go ahead and say hey to the people.
What is up, people? Today I feel like I need to have an extra energy drink and maybe do a couple of really masculine things. I might pause in between some of our conversation here to do some push-ups, you know, something like that, just because I'm feeling really manly. I think for those of you on YouTube, I should have worn a V-neck like you, man, because I want to show off my chest hair a little bit here, just because it's
manly. Oh, I don't wear the slutty V's.
I
can't do the slutty V's.
I'm going to take off the undershirt and just let this thing rock. That way you can see my sternum hair.
Yeah. All right. So today's show was inspired by a question we got last fall in our culture war Q&A. And the exact question was what the heck does healthy Christian masculinity look like? So today we actually wanted to spend an entire episode on that instead of doing it as part of that Q&A so we could put some more time into it. And instead of looking at the two ends of a pendulum here and trying to find the tension in it, we're just going to start to try to answer that question. And to do it, we are going to look to Jesus, because ultimately, go figure, he is who we should be looking at as our example for this question. If he embodied God himself while still being fully human, he is our prime example of how we should live as a man. But before we get to that, if you like the show, leave us a rating wherever you listen or watch. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, it'd be a huge help if you wrote up a small review. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you subscribe and hit that like button on today's video. But for today, we have five ways that we think Jesus shows us how to be a healthy, masculine Christian. And so what we're going to do is, Eric, I'm going to tell you my thoughts and what I see in Jesus, and then you're going to respond to that, and then we'll talk about each one of them for a couple minutes.
Okay.
Before we move on.
Yep.
The first thing, this is the one I am the worst at. It's the hardest for me. I don't know why. I struggle with this part. But the first thing Jesus did was he spent time with his Father to understand who he is and what God wanted him to do. So in the midst of all of Jesus's ministry, we routinely see him pulling away from everything to go and pray and spend time with God the Father. That was a regular rhythm of his life. And what I take from that is, before we do anything else as men, as Christian men, we have to spend time with God so we can learn who we are in him and what he wants from us. Because oftentimes we put our identity in so many other things, our job, our kids, our successes, our physical strength, our hobbies, whatever it is. But Jesus shows that healthy men first know who they are in God and let everything else flow from that.
Yeah. Oh. Yes. Yeah. And I think
your comments are correct.
Correct. Yes. I agree. Move on. No, just kidding. Okay. So more so, I would say the yes and to that. I think the other aspect of that is, not only do we get this societal pressure over who we are, where we find our value and everything else like that. I think we also, and you know, especially if you're a longtime listener to the show, you know that this is where I'm at, is like we take and we hijack what we see in the Bible and make that what men are supposed to be like as a falsehood, or we end up, which is the American Evangelical Church, we mix the two. For any of you who have ever been to or planned a men's event at church, I mean, if we just had a men's event bingo card, what would it be? Camo, axe
throwing, bacon.
Outdoors, camo, axe throwing, bacon, talking about guns. The speaker is either going to be an MMA fighter, another sort of professional athlete, or some military veteran, you know, somebody like that.
Hey,
like
there's also going to be food from exotic animals, alligator.
Or meat or something, whatever. Like meat, something that is like very carnivorous or high in sugar content like donuts and things like that. You know, again, when you go to school and it's a meat, you know, muffins with mom, donuts with dad, you know, like bacon with the bros. There's all of that sort of thing. And yeah, it's like those aspects are what are put on us as external features of what makes a man. But I love that you started with first was the internal. So we often first go, let's look around. And I mean, you can see it from some of these like wacko pundits and other things like that, especially on the extreme right on the conservative side. It's like, what's a man? What is a woman? You know, all those kind of things. And they're always looking at the external instead of, okay, let's start from what does biblical masculinity start from? And that is a close, intimate, in a word, in a way, relationship with who you are in Christ.
So I laughed in the middle of that because as you were talking, I went to the Ignite Men's Conference, which Ignite, of course, This is the men's conference that is hosted out of the church that's associated with Liberty. And the speakers, there are 9 speakers. The first one listed is Tim Tebow. The third one listed is Brian Dawkins, the Hall of Fame safety. In between them is Craig Groeschel.
Yep.
And then there's a few other pastors, a motivational speaker, and a couple other people. So just the football player thing made me laugh because of that. But then it goes down to the conference schedule. And they have their Friday night sessions, all that. Saturday morning of this conference from 7 to 8 a.m., is the Men's Alliance Rugged Outdoor Workout Real World Devotion Around a Fire at 8 o'clock in the morning, at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
But all the things that you joke about that are with your typical masculinity, like not only are they just doing this conference, but they had to add in a rugged outdoor workout with real world devotion around a fire because we can't figure out who we are in Jesus unless we have a rugged outdoor workout around a fire.
Yep. Yeah. And if I'm thinking back to the men's events that I helped plan or host, the first one I can remember, the speakers were, it was 3 UFC fighters. One that was, I don't even remember their names or anything like that. One that was like pretty popular, that was actually pretty good. The other one was like a mid-card guy. And then the third one was a local guy that I think was even the
Hang on. They've already announced part of next year's
lineup.
What's going to happen. And yeah. They've only got 5 speakers out right now, but the first one is a country music star. And the second one is a former NFL quarterback. So of the 5 they have listed, 40% are country music or former athlete. Go ahead.
So 3 UFC fighters. So that was like a Saturday night event. Saturday morning at one of the campuses, they came in and they put down all kinds of mats and stuff. And they had like a sparring demonstration where dudes could just like, which I think now I'm like, what kind of waivers did we have people sign? I don't remember them signing a waiver, but it's like nothing more manly than getting on a mat, rolling around with other dudes in Lycra. Like, let's go, bud. But we had to do that. The next one I remember was we brought in one of the guys. He's a national speaker from, he was part of like one of the dudes from Black Hawk Down, like one of the actual military, you know, Green Berets from Black Hawk Down. But now he's a speaker guy, everything like that, talking about bravery and camaraderie and stuff. And it was like all camo. Everything was like, it was before grunt style and 9-line or whatever apparel was out, but it was very much like that. And everybody had beards and the amount of flannel in that building. I mean, it was like crazy, the amount of flannel that you had there. So, and there was like donuts and bacon and that's what we would advertise is and bacon. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, oh my God. Anyway. So that's why I'm saying it's pretty much the same. And one day, again, if you're watching on YouTube, you can leave a comment, let us know. It's like, what are the pieces on your men's event bingo card? And from the ladies' perspective, we've talked about this too. The opposite is true, and we won't even get into that. But like, how many women's events?
Willows and women.
Right. Yeah. And then think about the things that we talk about at men's events too. It's like, it's how bad you are as a dude and how you need to like step it up and, you know, and show up for your family and sacrifice. And anyway.
And so the reason I start with spending time with God the Father and knowing who you are in him is because if you know that, the rest of it works itself out. If you take your identity from that, the rest of it can be worked out, and you're motivated to do it out of a love for God, as opposed to a former athlete telling you that you're a terrible person or a motivational speaker giving you pop psychology wrapped in Bible verses. So it starts with understanding who we are in God and what he thinks of us and what he wants from us. The second example I see from Jesus that I think is really important, especially in the culture we live in today, is Jesus had close male friendships where he displayed his love for them regularly. We see throughout the Gospels, Jesus being friends with not only the Gospels, but with other people as well, especially other men. It's said that Lazarus was a great friend to him. We see him establish a relationship with Nicodemus where he has dinner with him. And I can only imagine that relationship continued past that.
I can only Peter, imagine.
Peter, James, and John were set apart from the 12 as Jesus's closest friends. In John 13:1, in the story where Jesus is washing the disciples' feet, we read, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The Message paraphrases that to say, having loved his dear companions, he continued to love them right to the end. So the Bible takes multiple examples and multiple places to point out that, yes, these guys were following him because he was the savior of the world, but Jesus was legit friends with these people. He had these close friendships that he invested in and that he showed them regularly how he felt about them and how much he loved them. And I think what we take from that as men in today's society is if we want to be like Jesus, we cannot live a life of isolation. Friendships as adults, and especially as men, can be incredibly hard to find and to establish, but they are a core part of modeling who Jesus is and modeling our life after him. There's actually been studies, and the U.S. Surgeon General has put out research that Americans are living through what they are calling a loneliness epidemic.
Yep.
Because of the lack of relationships in our culture today. And the studies are showing how those have negative physical impact to our life, both from a body standpoint and an emotion standpoint. And so not only does Jesus model that we need to have healthy friendships, but there are tangible negative results if we live a life of isolation, isolated from other people.
And that just reminds me of those memes where it's like, what's the most unbelievable thing about the Bible or about the New Testament about Jesus?
Jesus had 12 close friends in his 30s.
Jesus was a single dude in his 30s with 12 close friends, you know? And it's like, I totally agree. Yeah. So that,
because it's hard, man. Like, especially in our culture, like I have a couple guys here in my town who I play disc golf with once or twice a week. I have some other guys that I know who I could potentially grab a meal with, but I don't know that I have a single dude living in the town that I live in that if something were to happen, I would call them. I would feel comfortable calling them and know that I could turn to them right away.
Right.
I have friends and go out and like grab you a drink who are across the country.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, like, you wouldn't locally, be able to be like, hey, can you go down to the local diner or whatever? I just need to chat like that. Thing probably wouldn't happen. I agree. I'm with you.
Like all the people who I could do that with are 25 to 60 minutes away from me at the closest, multiple states away in a lot of other places. So like, yes, we have friendships that are digital that we keep up with each other, but the sit across the table at a diner and talk about stuff, good, bad, ugly. Like I don't have that. And I feel the void there. But that, like, what I felt researching and putting together this episode was, yes, there's the need that I need to spend more time with God and build it into my routine to pull away like that, because I haven't been doing a great job of that lately. But I also recognize the void that I had in terms of those close male friendships that Jesus had, and recognizing how hard those are, but also how needed they are.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Now, I think the question maybe I would ask you is like, what do you think we are missing? What do you think we are missing without it? I'm trying to think in the terms of like, what do we see in the New Testament with Jesus and what he has with his disciples that we don't, and that we're tangibly missing here, and where it makes men's lives worse, but also the women in their lives, makes their lives worse as well.
I think, and I'm processing this on the spot.
Uh-huh.
There have been so many external negative pressures put on men to think, act, be, do a certain way. And men are tired of trying to follow those stereotypes. Just like women are tired of following the stereotypes, like the good Christian woman. If you're a good Christian woman, you're going to dress like this, act like this, speak like this, listen to this, all that. Like, I know women are tired of that. I know the women listening to this show are tired of that. But from a men's perspective, I think so many are tired of doing that. And then they're just like, I don't want the extra stress, man. Like, I feel the need for wanting to have more friends and to have more relationships, but like the emotional investment to go out and do that. And let's niche down a little bit, especially for guys who are trying to also be good husbands and be good dads. Because what you saw in past generations is dudes would just go out to the bar with their friends and leave their kids and their wife at home, and they would have those friendships and go out like that. Our generation is much more involved at home than previous generations. We're seeing the research showing that millennial dads are something like 2 or 3 times more involved at home than their dads were. So the trade-off of dad being home to help his wife and to parent his kids and to be active in their life is we don't have those relationships that are built at the bar, at the golf course, at whatever it is. So finding, I said we weren't going to talk tensions, but finding that tension between being present at home for your wife and your kids while also pulling away so that you can have time and space for those male friendships, that is a tension that every relationship, every family will be different in how they walk that. But I think the thing that is universal is how needed it is to try and live in that tension.
Yeah, I agree. And that's, you know, I want to make sure we back up to for male and female listeners, like this is not like how guys have it worse than women or anything else like that, or because of wives where the, that there's no game.
I specifically didn't say that. I'm just pointing that out. I specifically did not say because of this. I said because guys want to be involved.
Yep.
It's on us. It's something we're having to.
What I'm saying is that when people in typically have this conversation, it's easy to go, oh yeah, men have it so tough and we're not allowed. And women are like, are you kidding me? Like, oh, the expectation of men in this society. And women are like, wait, what? True, valid, get it, right? So this is not a comparison thing about it here. It is merely of like, this is what masculinity as a society tells us and biblical masculinity tells us. And, you know, and what we're talking about with the men's event, this is where we end up hijacking it. And we go, okay, let's take that typical American male masculinity and let's interject it into the Bible and go like, yeah, Jesus, he, you know, brought, sometimes you got to bring out the whip. Sometimes if you want to be a biblical man, amen, sometimes you got to bring out the whip and flip over the tables. You got to chase those
Jesus
money.
Used the weapon of his day. So if he were alive today, he would have taken an AR up into that place.
Oh my God. Could you imagine? Nazarene, breaking news in Jerusalem today, a Nazarene carpenter came into the temple wielding an AR style assault rifle and cleared out mass shooting, multiple money changers.
I'm sure there's
dead.
Somewhere we could find evidence of someone saying something similar. Oh, I'm being a little hyperbolic here, but I'm sure that argument
just
is out
a
there.
Rambo scene of him like shooting
probably from Matt
the
Walsh
hip.
Or
and then like at the end he goes like, keep the change, you filthy animals. Oh yeah, all the money changers like, Jesus, no, we're here because we're trying to make sure that everybody's got a sacrificial animal for their temple sacrifices. I believe you, but my Tommy gun don't. You got to the count of 10 to get your ugly, yellow, no good sandals out of my temple right before I pump your guts full of lead. Okay, Jesus, I'm going. 1, 2, 10. Oh my God, that would be so great. Oh, that would be so awesome. Number three.
This is funny because how that ties in with what you just said. Jesus was fiercely protective of those with less privilege or power than he had. He spoke up for children when the religious people, even the disciples, wanted to send the children away. He said, no, they have a place here. He spoke up for women all the time. He spoke up for those who had been marginalized by society through no fault of their own. Think of the people who Jesus healed, who society and the religious were saying, hey, who sinned to cause that? He's like, no. No one sinned. He's just sick. Go and be healed and sit and like speak good of me. Don't sin anymore.
Yeah, tell like especially that one. Like
some people even said, don't tell anything about it. Just go be healed.
Right.
And don't sin. And
in those situations where like we want to point out blame for someone, and he says you're looking at it the wrong way. Don't blame. You know, don't victim shame here.
Yep. He also spoke up for those whose actions had put them outside of the culture. The tax collectors who were greedy and screwed other people over with money, he went to them and showed them dignity. The prostitutes, he showed them dignity. All the people who society said were terrible people, he protected those people in a way that in some cases only he could because he had no sin nature. Guys, I am not telling you to go out and protect the prostitutes and to spend a bunch of time with them because Jesus did that. That's not what you take away from this.
Hold on. Let me also say this, though, because this is, man, how far are we into it? And I'm only now bringing up politics. Great. Oh, 20 minutes or so. Okay, awesome. Here's the thing is let's think about the way we talk about these things. And so when we're talking about, let's say there was a famous ex-president who used to be a reality TV show star that hypothetically. That, you know, is on trial as we speak for a hush money situation with an adult film star. How do we talk about Stormy Daniels? What are we calling her? Because I know that there are certain people in the Christian community that are calling her certain things. And there are certain people in the Christian community that aren't, that are going, oh, Stormy Daniels, she's the, you know, the whatever, blah, 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 because of her profession and because of what she does, and not the adulterer that paid to cheat on his wife with her and then paid her off to not talk about it. So how do we protect the dignity of people that we think, like, I think Jesus would have protected the dignity of people that we typically want to victim shame or blame based on their external, you know, components and perceived sins.
We see that in the story of the woman caught in adultery. I know we've referenced that a few times this season, but all the men in the story, the religious men, wanted to stone her and blame her, didn't say a thing about the man who she was committing the act with, because whether you know it or not, it takes two people to partake in that action.
Correct.
And
so I've heard
Jesus protected that woman. And we were the ones that put the title of woman caught in adultery on there.
Uh-huh.
Like that wasn't in the original.
Honestly,
text.
That heading never existed. Let's think about that. You know, it was that heading that chapter heading didn't exist. Until yep. We put it in there.
So what I think we take from that is that healthy Christian masculinity uses our position of privilege, especially as white males in America, to protect those who are underprivileged. Using Jesus as our model, healthy Christian masculinity doesn't simply accumulate things for our own benefit. Rather, it uses whatever we have to bring others to the table as well, and empower them because they, like us, were made in the image of God and deserve to be there as well. They deserve the same privilege and the same everything that we have. And as the people who have traditionally held the position of privilege and power, it's our job to bring them to the table. Now, if you're going to be the person that says that the white man is the most persecuted person in America, like my dad used to say, like, come on. Like, we're not having that conversation. You're not listening to the show if you think that. I know people think that, but no. Our job as Christian men is to protect and empower those who are not as privileged as we are.
Yeah. So if you are a middle class or higher white man, if you're a white man in general, but if you are a middle class white man, this is coming from me too. Like, I have to remember that I am Matthew. I am the tax collector. I am the one that comes from the highest place of privilege in the Christian area. And that's at the best case scenario. The worst case scenario is you're one of the Pharisees. Just remember, you have the place of privilege. And at the even worst case scenario, you might be one of the Romans or Roman soldiers. Like, you have more rights than and more privileges and a better head start than anybody else. And if you're able-bodied, think about all those things. If you're able-bodied, of average intellect, like all of those pieces, you are better off than the people that we're talking about. And so if you are to be a masculine man like Jesus, you are to advocate for them and protect them and, you know, and treat them with dignity. Protect the image of God within them.
Yes.
Yes.
Number four.
Next.
This is a version of number three, but it deserves its own point because it goes back to what we were just saying a minute ago. Jesus protected and empowered women. Full stop.
Period.
Jesus protected and empowered women. We mentioned the woman caught in adultery who would have been stoned under tradition that Jesus protected there. We also have the example of the woman at the well where Jesus not only sees her, but he empowers her to tell others about him. Because if you read the story, the part that we never talk about is she then went and told the rest of the community and they came out and met him. So he protected this woman and then she brought the entire city, area, town together to him. So she was one of the first evangelists ever mentioned in the Bible. We don't talk about that part though.
Yes, amen.
After the story, Jesus stays in Samaria, which on its own is an area that no good Jew would even walk through, much less stay multiple days. And it's all because of this woman who had had five husbands and was living with someone who wasn't her husband. Because he protected her, he showed her dignity, and then he pointed her back to himself and God the Father. He also empowered women routinely. They were the first to tell the story of him rising from the dead. We mentioned the woman at the well who was probably the first evangelist in the New Testament. He also empowered Mary and Martha to both operate in the way they were individually created. So he didn't shame, I always get them mixed up. He didn't shame the one that was too busy cleaning and providing. And he also allowed the other one to sit at his feet. It's kind of like, I'm a huge West Wing fan, Ed and Larry. I don't know which one was Ed. I don't know which one was Larry. They're always in the story together. So right. Mary and Martha, I always forget which one is which in that story. But what we take from this, in my opinion, is that not only should we be protective of women and standing in the gap with them, but we are to empower them to do the exact same things men can do. And on top of that, we should be giving them the freedom to do those things in the way they were created and not expecting them to adapt and do it in the way that a man would.
Oof. Okay. I know that I want to give enough time for that last piece that you said to exist. I also want to go back and talk about the idea that Jesus, that women were the first to tell the story of Jesus rising from the dead. And some people are like, well, that could be a coincidence. Sure. Yeah, right. Like with Jesus, could have been a coincidence. But I also
we
like
say God planned everything and that he's in control, but we're going to say that's a coincidence because we want to discreet.
Right. And yeah, of course.
Disenfranchise women.
But okay, what I love to think about is like there were obviously guards. There were obviously like other men around. And I love the idea that like, you know, Jesus was like hiding behind a bush or something like that. You know, he's like hiding in the waiting for everybody. And it's like, Mary,
Christ.
Not yet.
Now everybody comes out and he's got his little gardener's rake and, you know, he's raking. And then they come by and he's like, oh, you know, he's like got a little veil on or something like that. You know, got one of those neck gaiters like you see when you're outside working in the sun. And they just happen to pop by and he's like, this is going to be great. Oh, man. Yep. Exactly. Okay. So.
But yes. Hang on. Let me say this. We say that every word is in the Bible is inspired.
Uh-huh.
And that it is inspired by the Holy Spirit, yep. And that it's in there for a reason. Yet we discredit the fact that for some reason, the authors thought it was important to mention that the women got there first.
Yes.
But that's just a coincidence.
Uh-huh. I want to bring in all of the arguments for why this isn't true or anything else like that and try to debunk them. But I think it just stands. I think it's honestly probably just more frustrating for anyone out here that doesn't believe this, just to hear us end with this. Jesus protected and empowered women, period. No.
And if we want to be like him, we should too.
Yep. There's no qualifier before women. There's no women who did this or anything else like that. There's no like narrow gate definition of protected and empowered. He protected and empowered women. And did so in a society that that definitely
didn't.
Yeah.
Okay. The last one I want to point out today, if we want to be like Jesus in our attempt to be masculine Christians,
you want to be a man?
Jesus openly showed his emotions.
Yeah.
If we want to be like Jesus, we have to be okay showing our emotions. The best example of this is obviously found in John 11 when Lazarus died and Jesus openly wept, but he also showed his anger towards religious leaders. We mentioned that, but the context I want to show you there is it was because the religious elite were taking advantage of the marginalized and the poor. So because he protected and empowered the marginalized and the poor, his anger boiled up in him when he saw others, especially the religious, taking advantage of those people. And he showed that anger towards those religious leaders. And so those are two emotions that we often hear about with Jesus. But I also want to point out the Bible is ripe with Jesus's playfulness and his wit and his lightheartedness, what made him such a good friend to others. And there's a book called, I think I mentioned it before. I just forgot the name of it. I'll try to find it and put it in the show notes. But it's all about the personality of Jesus. Okay. And there are a lot of stories in there about how Jesus shows his personality. One example I want to show is in Mark 6, when we see the story of Jesus walking on water. The beginning of the story, it's an example of the first thing we talked about here. Jesus had been teaching, and then after he taught, he decided to hang back and spend time with his Father in prayer. So he sent the disciples across the sea on their way to another town. And while they were crossing the sea, a storm hit. So Jesus is sitting there praying on a mountainside, and Luke 6:48 says, quote, he saw them straining at the oars. So Jesus is on a mountainside praying. He looks across the lake right there, the sea, whatever you want to call it. He sees his best friends straining at the oars. And then it says, quote, very early in the morning, he came toward them walking on the sea and, quote, wanted to pass them by. So he saw them straining with the wind against them. He decided to walk across the sea to get to the other side. And he was just going to leave them there to keep them straining. He was going to pass them by on the way to the other side of the sea. But as he's walking by, the disciples see him, they freak out, and they think he's a ghost. And Jesus is just like, hey, it's just me. Don't be afraid. It's just me. And then he jumped in the boat and everything was okay. Like, we read that with such a serious tone in our viewpoint. But the fact that he watched them strain and he wanted to pass them by as he was walking. And it wasn't until he terrified them that he decided to say, hey, it's just me, it'll be okay, and then help him out. And I don't know about you, Eric, but that sounds like every male relationship I have ever had with a friend.
Oh, yeah.
Of course we're going to scare the crap out of them before we fix it. We've right. got to laugh a little bit.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's like, that's the number one dad joke. Like, if all your kids were in a boat like that, of course, you know, like when your kids are struggling with something, you'd be like, ah, you know, like make it worse first and then get better. So yeah, for sure. There's all kinds of times where I think we read it as Jesus is in like a Charlton Heston type of movie, you know, where everybody has a British accent and everybody's prim and proper. Right,
let me give another example, just because I want to hit this point home. Think of the story on, was it the Road to Emmaus, after Jesus had risen from the dead. There's the two guys walking down the road, and then Jesus pulls up next to him, and he's walking with them, and they don't recognize who he is. And like, he's like, why are you guys so sad? And they're like, have you not heard the news? Like, he's like, what? He's like, they killed Jesus today. Like, or they killed Jesus. He's gone. Like, we thought he was the guy and he's gone. And Jesus is just like, tell me more. Tell me about this Jesus guy. Tell me about what they did. And so these guys are like telling Jesus what had happened. And imagine Jesus's mood. He has just beaten death, hell, and the grave. He's risen from the dead. He has won his war. So he's got to be in a good mood. He's just walking along with these guys. Tell me more. Tell me more. Then he goes, ha, that was me.
Right.
Poof.
Poof.
And gone. He disappears.
That's my favorite part. It's like, just gone. Hey, suckers, I'm out, you know. But it's kind of funny because I wonder, like, just because of my sense of humor, I think about, you know, I hear these stories from celebrities that or authors that are sitting on a plane next to somebody that's talking or consuming their content, right? So you've got, like, I remember Rainn Wilson, Dwight from The Office, he was telling a story about how he was on a plane and the guy, and he had a mask on, you know, it's like during COVID. The guy next to him was watching The Office, not knowing that Dwight was sitting next to him, and he's asking him questions about The Office, and then he ends up like telling him, oh, I heard that show sucks. You know what I mean? And like going back and forth until it's like, finally the dude recognizes that it's Dwight, you know? So same thing on like authors where you've seen, I think John Acuff would talk about that too. It's like somebody's reading that you actually catch them reading their book. You know, Donald Miller actually even told that story. Like they don't even recognize it's me. So I feel like that's the situation with Jesus where he's like, this is going to be great. Watch this. I'm going to totally freak some. Hey, Holy Spirit, watch. I'm going to totally freak some people out. Here we go. I'm going to walk up next to him. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh my gosh, we're so sad. It's Jesus. Or, you know, Jesus is dead. And he's like, oh yeah, that must be really, really sad. And then just like, ha, suckers, gotcha. Poof. And then gone. Then he pulls a John Cena. Bah, bah, da, bah, just disappears.
Here's what we take from that. If we want to be like Jesus, we have to be okay showing our emotions, and that means all of them. We have to be able to cry when we need to cry. We have to be able to be sad when we're sad, and we have to be able to show that to the people who care about us and the people who are around us. We have to be able to show controlled anger when it is justified. And I say controlled because that story where Jesus turns over the tables, even though he's pissed off, he took the time to fashion the whip himself before turning over the tables. He was in complete control over his emotions at that time. We can't blow off because we're pissed off.
Yep.
We have to stay in control, feel what we're feeling, but stay in control.
Oh, the woman caught in adultery. The woman caught in adultery, same thing. They're coming out and, you know, angry mob, and we're going to stone her, we're going to whatever. And instead of Jesus going, whoa, 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 guys, oh, everybody settle down. Ah, we're getting anxious or nervous. Like that would be me in that situation. Like, somebody would come out, and even if I knew the answer and I was in charge, they'd come out and they'd be like, we're going to kill this person, blah, blah, blah. I'd be like, guys, settle down. Everybody's get all anxious. Jesus was like, yeah, keep talking. And he's like, no, just let me just write a couple of things here now. Let me write. I'm good. You want to see what I'm writing? You guys ready? Everybody ready to listen now? Oh, what's this? And then everything was better, you know?
He was in full control of his anger at that time. And then we also have to be able to joke around and have fun as well. So if we want to be masculine guys in the form of Jesus, we have to be okay with all of our emotions and showing them in appropriate ways in appropriate places.
Yep. And okay, so let's, I want to dig into this because this is probably another full topic at some point, is just like the range of masculine emotions. But I think on one side, the stereotypical male argument, male centric argument, is women are so emotional. But what we think is women are emotional, and we say emotions are sadness, right? Or jealousy, or, you know, whatever else. When we completely, those men completely forget that anger is an emotion. And so it's, yes, like, bro, if you have a hole in your drywall, guess what? You're probably a little emotional, buddy. You know, like if you fly off the handle and get angry, you're probably a little emotional, buddy. You know what I mean? Those sorts of things. Those are emotions as well. So we deny the emotions that we do show that are unhealthy, and we make fun of or downplay the emotions that for some reason we just don't feel are, you know, are justified or right or whatever. And so that side of it too is like, we need to acknowledge the full range of human emotions as emotions. Anxiety is an emotion. I think I've talked about this before, like my need to make sure that everybody around me is having a good time, that is an anxiety driven need. And so that's an emotion, right? My reaction, or I would say other people that I know, the reaction of like, oh, whatever restaurant, Jonathan, at every restaurant, I got to sit with my back facing the wall. I got to be looking at the door. I'm always, you know, I'm situationally aware. Got to make sure I'm not printing with my firearm. Like, bro, I'm going to say that that's anxiety or fear manifesting itself in masculinity. So the things that, you know, understanding that full range of emotion, knowing and being in touch with our emotions so we know an appropriate way to answer and to respond in that. And so I think that
here's what I would say to that. Let me interrupt you for this one. I am okay, given that you've gone and gotten your concealed carry permit and you have a legally bought firearm and you're able to, like, all those things. If you've done the process, if you want to carry that in the restaurant because of protection or whatever it might be, I am okay with that. But I want you to admit that it's because of that fear and anxiety. Because if you do that, I will trust you more than the guy who buries that fear and anxiety down and just says, no, I'm out here because it's my constitutional right and I'm going to carry it to protect my family. Okay, that means you're going to be trigger happy.
Yep.
If you can acknowledge that, hey, I've got this fear, I have this anxiety, and because of that, I have chosen to protect myself and my family in this way. I've gone through the class to learn how to use this weapon. I am following the laws to carry it in the correct way. Sure. Okay. I'll respect you for that. I may not do it myself. I'm never going to conceal. I won't say never, but I have no desire to own a weapon or conceal carry myself. But if you're in touch with all of those things, sure. It doesn't make you more masculine to say, I'm just here to protect my family because the Constitution says I can, I'm going to carry it. You don't want to mess with me because I got this gun on my hip. That's not more masculine than me saying, hey, I don't feel the desire to carry a weapon.
Right. And the inverse is true too, which I know I just want to make sure it's said. It doesn't make you less of a man or less masculine because you say, I'm not going to carry a weapon. And in fact, yes, I'm going to make sure that me and my family are going to run from danger. That's fine, right? Like anyone that I listen to in the like self-protection space that I think has a rational understanding of it, like the first thing they would say is, okay, like I was, you know, podcast about,
if you can run, if not barricade.
Yeah. Former Navy SEAL guy, big, you know, concealed carry, all that stuff. He says, if I'm out in Target and something starts going down and I'm with my wife and my kids, the first thing I'm doing is my wife and my kid, we are running out to the car. She is getting in the car. They are driving away.
I went through, this is a totally different topic, but I went through mass shooter training at church for security reasons and with our security team and taught by local law enforcement. They say that number one thing is to run. Number two thing is to barricade. Number three thing is to fight. Fighting is your last resort and the last thing you should try to do.
And
so, but all that to say, here's what I want to say with all of this. we purposefully didn't talk about these thing manly things versus like effeminate things.
Sure.
Because none of those matter to this discussion. If someone is doing these five things and living like Jesus and in these ways, masculinity and any other traditionally American descriptors don't matter.
Right.
If you want to carry a gun and use power tools and drive a big truck, awesome. Like, cool. If you're following these five things and trying to be like Jesus, sure. If you want to watch bad reality TV and know every word of a Taylor Swift song, that's great too, as long as you're following these five things. Our culture doesn't get to define what a man can or cannot do in order to be considered manly.
Yep.
So while I appreciate the heart of the question of asking what Christian masculinity looks like, I just reject the premise that masculinity looks any certain way other than the way of Jesus. And if I can have any part in spreading that message that we need to be like Jesus and the rest is just personality traits that we choose to like or don't like, then I think we'd be a much healthier version of ourselves, and American Christianity would be a lot healthier as well.
Yep. Yeah, I totally agree. And understanding the emotions that we have and how that drives our decisions, more so than what we think is driving our decisions. You know, like we talked about with the military, or not military, but the Second Amendment piece, right? Or self-protection or anything else like that. And understanding what emotion is actually driving it and getting honest with that before moving on. The other aspect is like when you are in touch with these five things, there are definitely going to be things that you do or say that will seem, quote, effeminate. But if we were to list out all of the, like, what is the American, the 21st century American society consider masculine and effeminate, we could probably put Jesus in both of those categories. And if you know that God is the perfect embodiment of the male and the female, and you know that Jesus should be, you know, God on earth, then we should bring out both traditionally or I should say Americanized masculine traits as well as Americanized feminine traits in order to actually be like Jesus.
Yep. At the end of the day, the question should not be what does healthy Christian masculinity look like, but it should be what does it look like to follow Jesus and mimic who he is. Because at the end of the day, that's what comes first. If we're doing that, the rest of it is just preferences. That's it for this week. If you want to talk more about this, feel free to reach out to us on social or send us an email to continue the conversation. Eric is at EricW712 on all the major platforms. I am at Jonathan_Caron on them as well. Or you can email them to hello@tensionpodcast.com. Next week, we start a 3-episode arc that I've been looking forward to this entire season. Next week probably has the best title of any episode we have ever done, but I am not going to tell you what the title is until next Monday when we release it. So if you like the show, do us a favor, rate it and review us, subscribe wherever you get podcasts or on YouTube so you can see that show title the second it comes out. If you found this episode interesting, share it with a friend if you think it'll help them. And as always, thank you for making us a part of your day, and we'll talk to you again next week. Have a great week.
I'm really upset that we didn't at all mention friend of the show, Mark Driscoll, or did we even reference his, like, you're not a man, you're not a real man thing? And like, oh my gosh, I just want a supercut of all the times Mark Driscoll manifests his insecurities through false bravado and masculinity.
We also didn't mention the current controversy that is going on of Stephen Furtick wearing a bright pink sweater to preach in, and people saying that's effeminate, and totally forgetting the fact that it costs $2,000. But
yeah.
Different episode, different day. Yeah.
night school.